Bradley Basker. Stats Adam.
Live from the K-Wer Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad. Brad Lewis is away this week again. Let's win a game.
Hi, Dr. Jeff here.
What's up, Milo?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad.
It's Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad, with Brad and Stats Adam.
Episode number 83. Welcome to the Washington University campus, or at least through your radio, welcome to the Washington University campus. We are coming from the campus of Washington University. I don't know how many times I'm going to say that today.
In St. Louis.
Yes, in St. Louis. Thank you very much. I did learn once that it was almost going to be dropped, the whole name entirely, and they added St. Louis. All right. Well, whatever. With all those tangents, welcome to April 4th on the campus of Washington University. We have Bedtime Sports here with Daniel Weiner once again stepping in for Bradley Basker. I think Basker's out on the golf course today.
I believe that's the case. Obviously, I'm happy to step in. I know Brad. But...
And if you're available next week, I think Brad might have another golf tournament next week. I don't know what it is, or something.
So can we change the name of the show to Stats Adam and Daniel?
I think the show officially is like Brad and Brad. it's still some way that it's Brad and Brad. And on KWR 90.3 FM, you're listening here in Clayton, St. Louis, whatever, to, I guess, Bedtime Sports with Daniel Weiner and Stats Adam.
I like it. I need a nickname, though.
Oh, how about Dubs W?
We'll work.
Okay.
We'll work on
that. Was just off the top of my head, and I had no idea where I was going with that one. Let's at least jump to some sports before we actually end up going through the entire hour and just go over nicknames and names of the show and where Brad is and stuff like that. Well, we got Tony La Russa is going to be speaking at graduation. It was announced this past Monday at the senior toast in the quad. Yep. Before I even talk about it, well, what do you have to say about Tony La Russa coming to speak for graduation for us?
I mean, obviously, I'm excited as a sports fan to see Tony La Russa come speak. What I'm most interested to see is what he's going to talk about. He's going to talk about his baseball career. He's going to talk about his animal rights activism, because that's something that I know is very important to him. So it'll be interesting to see if he just talks about leadership, something of that nature. And a lot of people are disappointed, actually. People who aren't sports fans don't even know who Tony La Russa is. And we're not that excited, but I think it's a good move on the university's part. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I completely understand where you're coming from. It kind of split the campus in half, or a third and a half, and a third and two thirds. I really couldn't really get a gauge. It seems like there's more people who don't know who he is than people who do know who he is. It's crazy. Just coming from somebody who has been a sports fan his entire life, I loved it. You know, it was something that I can't wait for, and it's going to be a fantastic graduation ceremony, no matter what he says. I just, because it's going to be fun seeing Tony La Russa at our graduation. Just having that presence, being able to say that he spoke at our graduation, is kind of a cool thing.
Right. It's a big name. Last year we had Cory Booker, which obviously people were excited about, and that was a very good speech. I was there for that.
Oh, yeah?
The year before that, I think it was maybe Mike Peters?
Mike Peters.
He's a WashU alumnus, like a cartoonist. So, I mean, that's not
cool.
A big name at all. So, I think Tony La Russa is an interesting pick.
Because, yeah, I just, off the top of my head, you know, there's so many accolades that you can list. There's so many things that you can talk about. I remember being there for Game 7, and I think you were there as well, right? In 2011 for the World Series victory?
I was.
So we were both there, just got to see Tony La Russa finish his career, and I guess Albert Pujols' Cardinals career, with a World Series victory. And it's like, I think it was just kind of a cool thing, because that was so early in our undergraduate career here at WashU, that it kind of is a nice bookending way, or, you know, it kind of says, all right, well, we're coming to a close here at WashU, and maybe that's kind of a cool way to finish it.
I like it. What do you, not to go off topic, mm-hmm. What do you think Tony La Russa's legacy is as a baseball manager? Because there are a couple things that come to mind. Do you think of him as someone who benefited off steroids with the Oakland A's and then St. Louis Cardinals? Do you think of him as the greatest micromanager of all time, switching?
I did hate Zepchinski, by the way. that was the bad taste that I left me, because he loved Zepchinski, who I think his nickname was Scrabble, because no one could spell his name, R-Z-E-P, whatever. That was the only thing that made me think poorly of La Russa ever in my experience with him. So that's the only thing that actually is bad for me. So there's really no bad things for me, because I'd rather have him speaking over somebody else. And then as far as his legacy, since he is going to the Hall of Fame this year, we're going to have the happy legacy as far as this year goes. Future years, when they look back on the record books and everything like that, they will have a little bit of him mixed in with the Maguires and the Canseco's in Oakland. So, ooh, that's tough. I would lean towards better chance that he has the good legacy than the bad legacy. Because did he also deal with alcohol as well? Is there a history of him with? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember that part.
Because I just didn't know if there was anything. Maybe that's just me from maybe just my head. I don't know. DUI in Florida for La Russa in 2007. Just small things. It's just something that popped in my head. For the most part, I think it's a good chance that there's a better legacy than there's a poor one. Like, the poor things would be in the third or fourth paragraphs.
Right, I agree completely. I think, at least what I remember him for, is just putting in pitchers for one hitter and then switching someone out, or switching out fielders all the time, just putting people all around the diamond. It's a very interesting game. Definitely slowed the game down, which is something I know Major League Baseball is trying to work on, but he's definitely done a lot for the game. So it'll be nice to see him on the WashU campus.
Perfect. So that was definitely interesting. I'm glad we were able to at least speak about La Russa coming to campus. That's May 16th for graduation for the senior class. About 2,800 students that will be graduating on that day. And we're just 10 days or 12 days and a month away from that. That's crazy to think about. But let's jump into, before we say goodbye to our WashU careers, let's at least say goodbye to March Madness first. We have the Final Four this weekend. I know Conan O'Brien's down in Dallas doing his shows, and they're having all these people on, from Charles Barkley to Dirk Nowitzki to everybody in sports. And, it's just going to be a great weekend there in North Texas, quote-unquote North Texas, Arlington, where the Final Four is going to be played. By the way, I don't know, have you ever been to a Final Four at, like, a dome or anything like that?
I have. I went to the one in Atlanta.
Was that last year? Or were you
back when it was Joakim Noah, Al Horford, Corey Brewer.
Those are the days. I can't stand going to games in domes.
Oh, I couldn't
Basketball
see a
game's
thing.
The worst.
I couldn't see a thing. I mean, they put in the Georgia Dome, which probably seats like 60,000 people or
That's
something
awful.
with the basketball court. And I mean, you couldn't see a thing really from most of the seats. So it should be interesting. I mean, it's in the Jerry Jones Dome, right?
That's correct. You're going to be basically watching TV if you are anywhere above
a very large TV.
Oh, yes, very large TV. I think Andy Katz was on Keith Olbermann's show last night, and he was talking about, they really enjoy doing a nice small-scale version of these big tournaments. They want to have everybody nice and closed, have everybody looking at the game, and then just start laughing entirely. So it's just it's pathetic. It really is. I was at the one in Indianapolis, Duke, West Virginia, the Butler year. I think it was I was there for the Saturday night. It was awful. You just can't stand watching those games from 50,000 feet up in the air, it feels
right.
like. They're ants. So for all those people who can see the games, whether it's on TV or in the first row, I guess, you're going to have some pretty juicy matchups. We were looking at last week, we were talking a lot about Kentucky's surge. We saw Kentucky. On that Saturday night here in St. Louis against Kansas State, we also saw Wichita State. So we saw two of the teams that should have been. I think those two teams were really the best teams in that region. I don't know if Louisville really showed it to me that they were, but Kentucky was the one who ended up stepping out of it, and we saw them just play very well and just honestly dominate Kansas State. Should have won by more that first round game. But then, they're now the late night game. They're favored as an 8 seed against 2 seed Wisconsin. They're on basically the hottest streak they can possibly be on. They've had some clutch shooting. They've come together, basically the freshman class plus a few sophomores like Poitras. What do you think about Kentucky, and what do you think about Wisconsin coming to this game? It's the late night game on Saturday night.
I mean, I'm not surprised at all that Kentucky is the favorite. They're the preseason number one. They have all this talent. They're finally coming together as a team. It seems like Julius Randle is playing terrifically the past couple of games. And, I mean, they're the more exciting team, and that's what people are going to bet on who's going to be favored So I'm not that surprised at all. Wisconsin, I mean, we talked about it before, not that exciting of a team, I guess is a way to put it. It's more of a defense-oriented
team. Does it remind you? I always think European, even though it's all white guys from, like, Michigan and Wisconsin. You know, it's all shooters. That's why I think European. I think just outside jumpers and finesse.
Yeah, I agree with that.
As opposed to Kentucky, which...
is the opposite.
Go ahead.
So I'm excited to see that game. It'll be interesting if it's a low-scoring affair, if Wisconsin can kind of slow them down, make it slow tempo, or if Kentucky can kind of run them up and down the floor. I think that's kind of going to dictate who's going to win that game. And the fact that Cauley Stein is injured is a huge deal. I actually thought that they wouldn't even beat Michigan without Cauley Stein. I mean, we saw him in that game against Kansas State. He was blocking people all over the place. He's a huge part of that defense. So it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do without him.
What's interesting is you look at the guy who came in for him, and people were crazily surprised that Marcus Lee, you know, I think he's also a freshman, didn't play basically at all this year. He's 6'9", 215, out of California. He was born 2 years after us, so it's kind of just crazy thinking about that, by the way. Anyway, he played six minutes a game this year, participated in what? You know, here and there, played a minute against Louisville, played 2 minutes against Florida. I think that was in the conference tournament final that they lost by a point to Florida. Hadn't played at all other than those, you know, other than the Michigan game and 1 minute in the Louisville game. And then comes out, almost posts a double-double against Michigan. 10 points, 8 rebounds. Is he the guy that can continue it? I don't know. He just looked like he just was a mammoth over every player against Michigan who just couldn't rebound the basketball. I don't know. I just don't know if Wisconsin will be able to put up with him.
I mean, we have to remember this guy is no scrub. I was looking at the ESPN top 100 recruits from this past year. He's number 25.
He didn't play.
He didn't play at all. That's Kentucky basketball for you. They have all these young guys coming in. I mean, they're sitting the 25th best player, theoretically, from that class on the bench, barely never played. So if someone gets hurt, some other All-American just steps right in. So that's something John Calipari just has at his fingertips at all point.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they played 8 deep against Michigan. And it was a crazy shot. I think it was Aaron Harrison who had the game winner.
I think it was Aaron, yeah.
It was just crazy to watch because Kentucky just seemed like if they needed an extra possession, they were able to grab that offensive rebound. They had 17 offensive boards. Compare that to their 18 defensive boards. And I know, you know, Michigan was rebounding the ball, as, you know, just as well on their side. But the problem was is that you take a look at the basket that Kentucky was shooting at in that game. They ended up rebounding 17 out of the 27 possible rebounds that were on their side. It's just crazy. I don't know. I just don't know if Wisconsin. I just don't know that about the Wisconsin's, you know, rebounding. I would guess they'd be a little better, but I just don't know about their athleticism. I don't know if they're gonna be able to keep up with them. That's the reason why I think I would go Kentucky here.
I mean, I'm going Kentucky as well. I was actually going back to his ESPN top 100 thing.
Yeah.
Marcus Lee didn't play because guess how many of the top 10 recruits Kentucky had?
6.
I mean, they had 5. Of the top 9.
Oh, top 10. Jeez.
So that's your Julius Randle, Andrew Harrison, Dakari Johnson, James Young, Aaron Harrison. So of course Marcus Lee didn't play. He had 5 top 10 recruits in front of him.
It's just crazy. I just don't know how that actually happens. I don't know how that occurs. It's just crazy. Well, and most likely they'll just go through one another set of freshmen for next year. And we'll see if they can come together in the tournament. I remember it was a few years ago, they were the 4 seed. I'm trying to remember which point guard it was. Was it the Marcus Teague team? I'm trying to remember which team it was, which big point guard they had. But they found themselves as a number 1 seed, I think a number 4 seed, now a number 8 seed. It just seems like if they make it to the final against, you know, most likely Florida, but we can talk about whether Connecticut has a chance there. Connecticut also has, you know, 1 star, and that's kind of like the Kemba Walker days. As far as Florida goes, Would the guards, you know, the tremendous guard defense that Florida has, would that be able to neutralize Kentucky? Like, would you say that Florida, if they advance, would be able to beat Kentucky?
I think they might be rooting for Kentucky, actually, because, I mean, if you look at the other 2 teams, I mean, they're playing Connecticut and they might play Wisconsin.
Did they lose to those?
The 2 teams that they've lost to. So
only 2 losses, right?
Only 2 losses. So crazy. It's kind of an interesting ending to their season. I mean, if they can beat Connecticut and then beat Wisconsin, they kind of prove themselves, yes, we're definitely the best team. We beat the 2 teams that beat us previously. Just kind of funny that it worked out that way.
Then It was, when I heard that, it was just weird. You don't see that too often. Teams barely even play each other, let alone see each other in the last 5 years, as far as when they face each other in the tournament, because they come from all over the place, and it's just so random of how teams are performing and stuff like that. My guess is Florida learns from from what happened. I know, was it off the top of my head, who is the point guard on Florida? I'm blanking right now. I know it's he's the starting point guard. He was suspended for the Wisconsin game, I'm pretty sure, and he was injured. I think he missed the last few minutes of the Connecticut game, which Napier had the game-winning bucket for. I don't know. Does the name
was
come
it,
to mind?
Wilbekin?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Scotty Wilbekin. Basically, I ended up watching a full game of his earlier this season against Kentucky, actually, the one that they were able to beat them in. It was a pretty big midseason game. It was the same night as, I might have referenced this last week, same night as the NBA All-Star Saturday night. And, you know, they were able to shut down Kentucky down the stretch. What was interesting was Wilbekin has really been, he stepped it up, and when he played earlier this season, he had two situations in which he wasn't able to finish the game against Kentucky, against Connecticut, and against Wisconsin. So maybe that's the difference. I can't see Connecticut making the upset, but because Connecticut seems to have had a pretty easy schedule thus far in the tournament. They've been in games even before the tip. It wasn't even like people were counting them out. It seemed like people counted them out at the beginning,
right?
But as they played game by game, it's kind of like those weird situations where you're like, oh, well, they're actually pretty good, same as Kentucky. The idea that they go along the way, and every single game they play game by game, the odds maker have them in the game. So I don't know. Do you have Connecticut put up a fight? I feel like they should.
I think it all depends on Shabazz Napier. Mm. I mean,
is he help? Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Is definitely. He's the guy for that team. I see the stat that you have here. They scores or assists on 45% of UConn's points, which is a ridiculous number. So, I mean, he's gotten them here so far. He could do it again against Florida. We really don't know. But I think for Connecticut, it really just ends up being up to one guy.
If I put the over-under at 12 free throws attempted, because he put up 22 against Michigan State last week, which is nuts. 22 free throws that he attempted. He scored. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the team. That was 22 free throws for the team. Does UConn attempt that many free throws again? Like, I just don't think that they're able to make that, you know, they shot a great percentage, 21 of 22. I don't know if they make it to the hoop as much, because Napier, I'm sure, made a lot, you know, took up a lot of those. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do that against Florida's stifling defense. They seem to be, what's interesting about this is there's not that many pros on this Florida team, or at least good pros, you wouldn't think, as opposed to the team that you were referencing earlier when you were at the Georgia Dome. That team had pros and was able to come together in, you know, two straight years, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it as well. Maybe their defense isn't stifling. I don't know.
I agree. I think the defense, I mean, Florida's defense is obviously amazing. It'll be very hard for Connecticut to get to the hoop. I mean, Shabazz Napier is a very undersized guy. It'll be interesting to see if he can match up against that defense.
And yeah, it's really interesting. I'm just not sure when looking, you know, I think he scored a game-high 25 last week, which is, you know, amazing. And I think it was against Nova that he came out for an injury, came back in basically 5 minutes later and was able to close out the game easily. It's just amazing what he can do for a team that, yeah, really does not have much else on the offensive end. I know Ryan Boatwright put up double digits last week. DeAndre Daniels did as well. But, yeah, you look at a guy who he made all 9 of his free throws last week. Yeah, you know, actually, if I put it the over-under for him, you know, 7 free throws. Does he shoot more than 7 free throws, you think, this week?
I don't see it happening this
Interesting.
Week.
Interesting. So you're thinking most likely then Florida advances, right?
That's what I'm going with. I mean, I think Florida is the best team in the tournament.
Yeah.
It's up to them if they act that way in the next two games, but I think they are the best team in the country right now.
So if... let's see then. All right, well, by how many points do you think for Florida?
I could see this being not that close, personally, and maybe Connecticut coming in at the end, making it closer. I'd say maybe Florida wins by 10 points again.
Interesting.
So I guess that would make them, how many games in the row? That would be 5 straight if they win by more than 10 points again.
Yes. So they've already brought back, what is it, the last team to do that, I think ESPN Stats and Info had this, the last team to do that was the Kentucky team, or it was Elias that had this. Kentucky in 2012, obviously, national championship winner. And then that was the 4 games in a row of double-digit wins. I guess, you know what? I think I go to Connecticut. I'm going to say Connecticut and Kentucky in my final, just because Shabazz goes with 35, just takes over. Wilbekin has nothing to, yeah, just does nothing. And yeah, I like it. I want to have a little stake in a guy who I used to see in the flesh. I remember watching him playing, for the other team against my high school, just 5 years ago. Yeah, I want to see that happen. It'd be kind of fun to see him in the championship game, because was he on the team that won it with Kemba Walker? Because is he a junior or senior right now? Because I'm trying to remember when
he's a senior.
I think he did win the national championship that year when Kemba took them all the way. Yeah, he must have. They won in what was it 20? Was it 2011 that they won?
I think it must be 2011.
Because I remember them being, what was it, 3 seed. It was, I'm trying to remember if, because it was, he must have, yeah, it's kind of crazy thinking about the experience, because he played a legitimate role. Obviously, it wasn't Kemba Walker's role, but he playing like him now, it's kind of interesting that he's emulated a guy who he saw freshman year.
Right, he scored 5 points per game in that freshman season.
He was a first team All-American with Kemba. I know Kemba, I'm pretty sure, was a higher one, but he was, I'm seeing Shabazz Napier on the, oh, I'm sorry, that's this year. So for his, yeah, he's basically emulating Walker. It's amazing. I'm kind of speechless now, because it's amazing that just thinking about what he has done through his 4 years there, I'm just really impressed. He still played 24 minutes a game that year.
And then going on to the pro game, do you see him being as successful as Kemba's been in the pros? I mean,
Kemba's been up and down, right? But he's still been solid.
I mean, he's scoring 17 points per game this season.
Is this his third year then in the league? Or second? Kemba for...
This is his second year.
Second year?
No, third year,
right?
Sorry.
Yeah, that makes sense. Bobcats, right?
Bobcats. He scored 12 points his first year.
And this will be his first taste of the playoffs, I'm pretty sure, too, this year. He's dealt with a little injury trouble, and I feel like Shabazz would be the same, similar... Oh, it might be a similar situation. Is Kemba's a little taller, so that's why I give...
Kemba's 6'1".
Oh, really? They're both 6. Oh, this is weird. All right, this is like all coming out right now, because I had no idea. They're basically the exact same player. I'm seeing 172 for Kemba, and maybe that's a little light for him, but 180 on the poundage for Shabazz. This is like, maybe this is the perfect comparison now. I'm really enjoying this. Now I'm taking Connecticut as my winner, because I really want to see Shabazz take... I want to do the exact same thing, and now it's... Is this the second year with Kevin Ollie? I'm trying to remember. But it's so cool that now we're going from Kemba Walker in 2011, taking them all the way to national championship that year. I'm thinking they're going to... I know they were a 3 seed that year, but 7 seed of UConn is my champion. I'm going to guess Florida is yours.
I'm going with Florida. I just think they're the best team right now. But it's actually interesting. I saw an ESPN poll. Who do you think is going to win it all? Connecticut was actually last.
I'm not surprised.
It went Florida, Kentucky, Wisconsin, and then UConn, which is interesting. I think people think of Florida as just too good. So I feel like people probably are more into UConn than Wisconsin, just because of the media darling nature of Shabazz Napier and the good story there. So it's interesting to see that they're actually last in that poll.
It's just so cool thinking about that. I think it was Dr. Jeff who ended up having Connecticut. I forget if he, I know he did in the bracket. It was just crazy to remember, and that's why it's always stuck in my mind, like the Kemba Walker team. But yeah, I'm thinking it'll be a really interesting. I hope he gets drafted by the Bobcats. By the way, that would actually be awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah.
So we're looking at, and then let's see. So yeah, as far as the national championship, so you are Connecticut by. Oh, I'm sorry. You're Kentucky losing to Florida.
Right.
And that would be by?
Well, I'd say it's by I think it's going to be a close game if that ends up being the case. But, I mean, I don't know if you really want to listen to me. My bracket's been pretty terrible. Even though that Tennessee pick almost happened to upset Michigan, they only lost by like 2 or 3 points.
They fought really hard.
Hard at the end.
That's why I didn't think Michigan had any chance in the next game. Because it was just, I just did not, I was not a big fan of what I saw from Michigan. You know, it would have been nice if they had the big man who got injured last year. I know Stauskas played really well. Once again, I think he was the darling of last year's game. Last year's tournament when they made it all the way to the national championship. But I feel like as far as Michigan goes, Glenn Robinson played well. Stauskas got to the line a lot. Actually, more than even what Napier did in his game. So I'm just trying to, you know, I'm thinking of their team from last year. I'm trying to remember who that was. I'm just blanking on a few of these names. You remember he was out for the entire season this year. It was a back injury for Michigan. I'm blanking today. Mitch McGrary. And what's interesting is he's also one of those undersized big men, I'm pretty sure. I think he's 6'10 or something like that.
I think the big difference between these two teams is Trey Burke being here.
When you lose honestly, Trey Burke's been maybe the best rookie in the league this year. I know he's been on the frustrating Jazz team that's trying to put some pieces together, but they're still lacking in a few areas. They're only working with a very limited amount of depth. But he's been maybe my favorite rookie of the year, obviously with except Kelly Olynyk. No, I'm sure. But I just think losing Mitch McGrary, losing obviously Burke, it was frustrating. Yeah, 6'10" for. McGrary, and he played very well last year. He was huge in the middle, and they just didn't have that big, we saw Kentucky take over in the inside with the 17 offensive rebounds last week. So, we're looking at just an interesting Final Four here. I feel like with regard to, Florida just stepping it up as they continue to go through, they kind of just buzzsaw their way through their bracket there. Does Kentucky have a chance if they make it to the finals against Florida? I know you were mentioning how they're most likely they would lose. Randall seems to, for me, he just seems to quietly go through this tournament. I know people have been really excited about him, and he seems to always put up double doubles. And I think he's up at the nation best for 24 this year. I'm just not sure that he's as good as everybody's touting him as. I think he's overrated now. He's quiet for me when he's on the floor.
He's very quiet. I mean, he can disappear in games. Yes. That first half that we saw against Kansas State, I think he didn't have any points for the whole first half. I mean, he came back and I think ended up with a double-double anyway, which kind of shows the amount of talent he has. But I think Florida-Kentucky is probably the most exciting matchup if that were to occur. And I think that, Kentucky has all those big names and Florida really doesn't have them. So it's a very interesting one against 8 seed, but would it really be that big of a spread between the two? Because, Kentucky has Randall, Harrison, all those players in Florida.
That'd be interesting.
Doesn't really have one superstar.
So you would think it would definitely be smaller than the current spread for Florida's game on Saturday. You would think it'd be a lot. Do you think it would be like half that much? So you have right now, it opened at 2. A few books are still at 2, but mostly 1.5. My fault. This is the Kentucky game. For 1.5 in favor of Kentucky. You're pretty much across the board 6 in favor of Florida against Connecticut. Would it be like 2?
Yeah, I think it'd be 2 or 3.
In favor of Florida.
It'd be a great game.
You got that right. And because I'm pretty sure Florida extended the lead at the end, but it was a one-possession game almost all the way when they were playing mid-season. And then they played the one-point game in the conference tournament. I'm just really excited for this weekend. If we're looking at the pros, and we can, I enjoy looking at what we're going forward, and I think you mentioned what we think of Napier going forward, and as far we'll talk a little about Randall. Anybody else that you would think of that comes to mind as far as a pro or anything like that for these teams that you really want to see on maybe even on the Hawks, just a player that you think would be good going forward in the draft here.
I'd love to see Aaron Harrison on the Hawks. We need guards. We needed a whole team, but that's beside the point. He's proven himself this year, in my opinion. He's looked great. I think Aaron Harrison would be a good fit for any team, but I'd love to see him on the Hawks.
That's interesting. And you'd rather have Aaron over Andrew? Or is it kind of like a toss-up?
Maybe it's a little bit of a toss-up. I don't know. I prefer Aaron for some odd reason. I don't know if I can explain it.
There's a little bias already from the Twins, right? Yeah. it's going to be really funny because both our teams will now be in the lottery and we'll be excited to see which.
Hey, we're fighting for that 8th spot against the Knicks. We can
What's going on right now? Because I just want to talk NBA. That's really what I want to do. We can jump into a little baseball later. We only have a few more months of NBA and I feel like it just would be nice to continue with that. So we look at the standings right now. The Knickerbockers now have a percentage point lead. I think it's 2 percentage points on the Hawks. The Hawks still have 2 more games that they can play extra compared to the Knicks. Do you want them to make it?
No. I mean,
I like how you said fighting. Is it fighting to not make the eighth spot? Is that kind of like what it is now? It's fighting to stay out.
I want to stay out. I'd rather us be in the lottery. I'm kind of disappointed that we're even keeping it this close at this point. I would have hoped we would tank by now, but
well, isn't that what you guys are kind of doing?
I don't think we're doing it on purpose. I mean, when you have half your team injured, it's kind of hard to put up a pretty good performance there. But I mean, the way Indiana's been playing, do you think the Knicks could even win that series against them?
All right, so this is going to be perfect because this is what I wanted to go with. What up with that? We'll put this right in right now. The Pacers, they finally kind of stopped that. We're going to call it a swoon, kind of like the victory that they had over the Heat, right? Then they had the win over, I think it was the Pistons. But other than that, it has been just ugly basketball recently. I've been listening to a lot of NBA podcasts recently. The Pacers have the second worst offensive efficiency since February 1st. You know who's last? Pretty easy.
It's got to be the 76ers.
Yep. So they're not really a basketball team, so pretty much the Pacers have the worst offensive efficiency in the league.
Pro basketball team.
Yes, thank you. Pro basketball team. Yeah, you know, maybe like in Europe when they relegate teams for soccer, that's kind of like what the 76ers should do. Maybe Kentucky can just come to the NBA.
So should we relegate the whole Eastern Conference? Or
it's not a bad idea.
Pacers make that included. The D-League? Yeah.
Pacers included. I think the only team that I think might have a chance to win the title now is the Heat. I'm not counting out the Pacers. You know, it's kind of like we can make jokes about them as long as we want, but you put together a week of good basketball, because I think everybody's counting them out, and it seems like this is not the time that, after playing, about a half a year or half a season with Paul George as an MVP candidate, Roy Hibbert as your Defensive Player of the Year candidate, basically George Hill as a solid point guard, Lance Stephenson as maybe the Comeback Player of the Year, David West as an all-third team power forward. This team is tremendous. It's got a lot of talent. I remember when David West shut down the Celtics to go to the Pacers, he was right because he knew that they had a future, and they do. They were playing great. And I think that this team can really pick up the pieces as they go to the end here. Speaking of your Hawks, they're on the schedule. Raptors, Bucks, Magic, all easily winnable games. I know the Raptors tonight might be a nice context for them, but the Hawks, Bucks, and Magic just not
scream. Doesn't get much easier than that.
They do have the Heat and Thunder in there, but that'll be fun to watch. I don't know how many guys are playing those games, because most likely, I don't know if anybody... We'll see if Westbrook even plays. It's a Sunday afternoon game on ABC.
He's sitting today, I think he's sitting today or tomorrow. Right. I guess the interesting thing to me is something I was thinking about. Do the Pacers regret getting rid of Danny Granger?
See, all right, there are two aspects of mine on this one. One question was, everybody loved Danny Granger in that locker room. No one really talked about it, but afterwards it came out that, similar to, this is more of my Celtics mindset, but when Perkins was traded, that was Rondo's best friend.
Right.
When Granger's traded, that was Paul George's mentor. That was a lot of the guys, they knew him because he was a Pacers lifer. It's really interesting. So that's one part of the argument / conversation. The second one is, when you're playing so well, you're playing great, you're the best team in the NBA through the trade deadline, why are you changing things up? Why are you trying to make them better? Because you've already made yourself a team that can wreak havoc with the Heat.
I agree. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
It was an interesting move on their part. I mean, Evan Turner, he's been decent for them.
Yeah, what's interesting is, he part of a winning ball club? But he's never been part of a winning tradition other than the team that beat the Derrick Roseless Bulls in the first round of the playoffs in 2013 or 2012. When they advanced the second round, and I think it pushed the Celtics to 7 before the Celtics lost the Heat, and the Heat eventually won the championship that year. So when you look at those two parts of the conversation, is there one that stands out to you? I know, Evan Turner has been good. Then LaVoy Allen's a solid contribution. I don't even know what he's done this year. I haven't even heard of LaVoy Allen since he's been traded. I knew of him because he was helpful to the 76ers. You just haven't really heard of him since he's gone to the Pacers. Would you say that there's one that balances more for you as far as whether you think it's if it's not broken, don't fix it, or if it's the mentor of Danny Granger that they lost?
I think it's the mentorship. I mean, Evan Turner seems to fit in basketball-wise for the Pacers, but they're not winning nearly as many games, so it makes me think that Danny Granger was everyone knew he's important, but maybe even more important than anyone would have thought to that Pacers locker room. It doesn't seem like Paul George can really step up and be that leader yet. He's kind of missing the Danny Granger figure to fall back on. Paul George has played pretty terribly as of late. He's kind of come back the last couple of games. I think he scored 27 points his last game.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, he's been a terrible shooter. So it's very interesting to see what that's done to him.
What's interesting is, and this is something about Granger, is, oh yeah, Paul George, I don't know what's been going on. He's been arguably the worst, one of the worst all-stars, would you say, in the second half of the NBA season. As far as Granger goes, the Clippers are 10-2 when he plays in their games. He was, let's see, do a little math here, 21-8 when he played for the Pacers earlier this season. So the Pacers posted a pretty good record when he was playing. Would he have been, and this was weird, their offense was not conducted through him like the Clippers' second unit seems to be. Did they misuse him? Was it kind of like the idea that they were, or thought they were ready, and they just didn't, they kind of snuck him in as an additional piece, kind of like a Kyle Korver piece, more than a point forward type of player in the second unit in Indiana? I kind of wish I've watched more Indiana recently. It's been more of their defense that was able to stifle Miami. It's more of their defense that's able to take over and help out their offense. You know, they're still on pace to be one of the best defensive teams over the last decade. It's really interesting because I don't know if you need to get a bucket down the stretch. You know, there are a lot of guys who you think can do it for this team, but there's no alpha male like LeBron, and there's no guy who can take it to the hoop. I honestly don't know if Paul George is going to be able to get the all-star call anymore, the superstar call anymore, because it just doesn't seem like he's going to be able to make it to the hoop as well as he was before. So my guess is that if the Bulls face them, both teams have terrible time trying to score. And by the way, the assist rate for Indiana, fourth worst in the league, which makes me wonder as well, are they not moving the basketball as well as they could? Maybe they just don't have that point guard that you would want. You know, it's kind of weird. You'd rather have a Russell Westbrook, you'd rather have a Chris Paul, you'd rather have a Rajon Rondo, a guy who can even pass the ball. You know, it seems like George Hill just does not seem to be up to the task. Maybe Darren Collison wishes he, or they wish Darren Collison, also a Clipper, was back in Indiana like he was a few years ago.
Right, or maybe even like a Kendall Marshall.
Just anybody who can dish out the basketball.
Distribute.
See, anybody could add Kendall Marshall a few months ago.
Right, it's one of my favorite stories of this season, seeing Kendall Marshall just come in, play his heart out for the terrible Lakers team. But
I think the worst part is that he couldn't do it for like a team that was battling for the playoffs. You know, maybe it's the no pressure that kind of helped him. But yeah, it's just so weird to think about. And if you go over to the West a little bit, and this is just gonna be a nice continuation of talk here as we go to a little bit more of the NBA. And I'll sneak in a station ID here. We were listening to KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM. We're talking a little bit more about the NBA playoff picture. You take a look at the Western Conference here, it's craziness. Dallas got a huge victory in Clipperland last night, almost gave it away as they were getting down to the final buzzer. I think the Clippers had a chance to tie or take the lead on at least one possession. I know JJ front-rimmed a three-pointer in his return to the lineup, or at least return to the team. And now you have the Clippers hanging around in that third spot. Most likely will finish in that third spot with Houston floundering. But now you have this juicy, juicy situation with Dallas, Memphis, and Phoenix in the bottom three spots. And they have the tiebreaker with Memphis taking over from Phoenix. And that's the same. I think that's what... I don't know what the tiebreaker is for Atlanta, by the way. Do you know what the... Before we finish with your Hawks, I know the whole reason why we originally started this talk was with the Hawks. The tiebreaker looks like it is 2-2 there, so I got to look a little further into it. But as far as the tiebreaker in the Western Conference, Memphis has it over Phoenix. And where do you see this one going? Because you have a lot of this Western Conference, just as we were talking about with the 8 seed almost taking down the Eastern Conference first seed, you know, with either the Hawks right. or Celtics, most likely the Knicks over the Pacers. Would one of these teams have the chance over the Spurs? Would the Memphis Grizzlies be able to do it again?
I don't see them being able to do it again this season. It seems like, at least to me, the Suns are going to be the ones left out of those three teams from the playoffs.
Hmm.
They've lost two games in a row. Obviously, one was to the Clippers, but the other one is to the Lakers, which is a pretty bad loss for them. Dallas has been looking good. Memphis, I know they were my pick last week to be a team on the rise. They've been decent. I just don't see them being the Spurs. The only team that can beat the Spurs to me is the Oklahoma City Thunder, which we saw last night. So in this season, the Thunder are 4-0 against the Spurs, which doesn't bode well for the Spurs in the playoffs if it comes to that conference finals.
Does the playoffs make you think a little differently for the Spurs? I know a few years ago when the Spurs came into the playoffs with that huge winning streak, ended up extending it to 20 before they, what was it, they had a 2-0 lead on the Thunder, went to the second round, and lost 4 straight to that Thunder basketball team, which is pretty similar to now, you know, with Durant and Westbrook leading the charge. Is Westbrook fully healthy and going to be able to lead them to a championship? Is that like kind of what you're thinking here? Because if no one else can stop the Thunder, I don't think anybody else other than the Spurs has a chance of stopping them. I don't like the Clippers. You know, I enjoy Doc Rivers making them a little bit better. I enjoy, you know, the additions of Glenn Davis and Danny Granger. But I just, the makeup of this team, especially with fragile Blake Griffin, almost went down again last night, just doesn't make me think that any team in this Western Conference is ready to take them down. Especially, I think Houston, we don't know if Patrick Beverley's back. We talked about that a little bit last week. The Thunder seem to be my all in all, big time favorite in the West.
Yeah, I mean, the Thunder are my pick to win it all. I mean, it's hard to believe that Kevin Durant's gotten better than he did last season. And then what Russell Westbrook is playing very well. He's probably playing most of the time, but he's getting to sit every now and then just to help his knee out. And I think that's a great choice, just so he's ready for playoff time. I think they're definitely a team to beat, in my opinion, in the Western Conference. They've shown in the regular season they can beat the Spurs. Obviously, playoff basketball is different, but basketball's a game of matchups, and obviously they match up very well against the Spurs. So it'll be great to see. Hopefully that is the conference finals, and I see the Thunder pulling that one out.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, that would be really interesting. What makes me think about the Spurs having a chance is being fully healthy. You know, most likely, you know, we'll see. Popovich really enjoys keeping the minutes down. I think Danny Green was the only player, I think only did it once too, to top 40 minutes during that entire winning streak that ended last night. So there's a possibility of them being fresh and being ready. But of course, at, you know, the ages of Tim Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili, you don't know if they're ready, or you don't know if anything will snap at one point, you know, during the playoff run, which is a lengthy time. And, you know, they of course have time to rest. No back-to-backs in the playoffs, especially without the lockout. Then, you know, we're so far away from the lockout now, it makes me feel actually nice to say that, you know, right. No back-to-backs in the playoffs and no back-to-backs in the regular season, which was crazy. It's going to be a captivating run. The only thing that makes me think that the Spurs have a chance is because they have they have almost the exact same home and road records. You know, obviously the best in the league on the road, really don't need the home crowd. They're going to get it. So it's kind of like a wasted opportunity, unlike the Pacers, who really enjoy having that game 7 at home if they can hold on to the East. Because you look at Miami, and they have the best road record in the East. Not even close, though, to what the 29-9 road record in the West there for San Antonio. It's amazing. So, yeah, I guess. And then it's really shaping up to be an Oklahoma City-Miami final, which will be a rematch of 2 years ago. We can even preview that right now. What do you think? If the Thunder face the Heat, is it? My guess would be it'd be a three-peat for the Heat. I just don't see the Thunder matching up that well. There's no Harden. There's really, I think it would be like a 4-2 Heat victory if they faced the Thunder.
Yeah, I agree. I think this would obviously be ESPN's dream to see LeBron against Durant. I can just see all the promos right now. I mean, it'd be great to see the two best players of our generation.
Definitely.
Or the new generation at least. Play against each other in the finals again. So I agree. I think the Heat are too strong. I mean, they look like they're going to get that one seed in the East, which is very important just to be able to play at home if they are eventually going to play the Pacers in that conference finals. It's a pretty important point. So I think the Heat are going to come out of the East. It's going to be the Thunder out of the West. And I just think the Heat are going to be able to defeat the Thunder, whether we like it or not. But
most likely the Heat would end up being the non-home court team for the first two games. It would be 2-2-1-1-1, which they're moving to this year for the first time in NBA. I think it's NBA history, the 2-2-1-1-1 format, the finals. So you have the San Antonio Spurs, or the Thunder, I guess we're going with the Thunder here, having the first two games in Oklahoma. I think that would give them a better chance than they did have 2 years ago, even though it was the Harden Thunders. Harden on the Thunder. So, yeah, it's just really interesting. It's shaping up to be, like, you could see on paper this could easily happen. However, the West is such a drag-it-out situation. The Pacers could catch fire, But at this point, just a couple weeks before the end of the regular season, we're just about 2 weeks before we ended. It's amazing that we're so close. I think 2 weeks before this, I think we're 2 weeks away exactly, or 2 weeks and 1 day away from that marathon Saturday of the first day of the playoffs. So, I'm just really excited. I don't know. Was there anything more that you want to talk about in the NBA, or
let's move on to baseball? That's sounds good. It's beginning of the season.
Yeah, I completely forgot about baseball. I kind of enjoyed a lot of basketball right now, but you're right, absolutely a lot of baseball, and we're going to get to that baseball right after our public service announcement.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. For free ideas on how to save, go to feedthepig.org. If someone you know is thinking of dropping out, talk to them. It could be the one thing that keeps them going. Go to boostup.org to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now you got the double dose of public service announcements there. I know you're really excited, Dan.
Thank you very much.
I've just honored. So we snuck those in there at the 45-minute mark where they're usually supposed to be one, but we gave you two. All right, so to make up for the early one. So anyway, some baseball. Oh, so you know what that means? I think that means you want to go with some What Up With That.
What Up With That? Taking on the issues of today with soul. Yeah. I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Got a big old box of popcorn to clear my head. Went to the theater and down I sat. Going to the movies with What Up With That.
There we go. Some nice Kenan Thompson there in your ears for the What Up With That segment on SNL that I think I might have mentioned this last week. I haven't heard it in a while. I'm just looking forward to when it returns. So anyway, let's see. Top selling jerseys in the MLB. I was completely surprised by this. I did not see this coming. Two Red Sox are at the top. That is David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia. That's 1 and 2. 3, Derek Jeter. Maybe. I guess I understand that. We definitely got to that. Yadier Molina, number 4. Interesting. You don't really see the Cardinal usually step up there in the top. And then number 5, Clayton Kershaw, who started the season on the DL, but arguably the best pitcher in the league now, maybe the best pitcher of all time. What up with that?
I think it's more of a story of who isn't in the top-selling jerseys. I mean,
right.
There's this guy named Miguel Cabrera. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's pretty good. And he plays for Detroit, which is a big baseball city. Kind of reminds me of the St. Louis of that region, whatever region that is. And also Mike Trout. I mean, talk about an exciting player for that LA market, I guess Anaheim per se, but still kind of that market. And he's not in the top 5 either. So it's kind of interesting to me that, first of all, 2 Red Sox at the top. So I guess Red Sox Nation is very strong.
Do you think it was the World Series that did it? Because it throws me off to see 2 at the top. Why is Derek Jeter 3rd?
Derek Jeter 3rd, maybe everyone has Derek Jeter.
Do you think it's only the people who just didn't get them until this year? You think, but why not with Ortiz? Ortiz has been a mainstay. Maybe it's
right. Same with Pedroia. I mean, isn't like Dustin Pedroia's new acquisition for the Red Sox?
It's just odd.
I think it's new fans coming from that World Series win.
It's the pink hats. We call them it's the fair weather fans in Boston that come to the games and don't really know anything except for singing Sweet Caroline in the middle of the 8th inning. And usually are completely out of it, so to speak, in the 9th inning. We're not even there for it.
I'm kind of asking, what up with the Tigers? I mean, you can't even sell Miguel Cabrera jerseys.
Or Mike Trout, right?
Or Mike Trout for the Angels.
Which is a huge market in L.A. as well, just the entire state of California, which has, you know, 3 baseball teams. I don't know. I just think of, you know, it's baffling. You know, you have the Kershaw there, which is nice, but... Yeah, very interesting. So,
if you're looking at a guy like Miguel Cabrera, I mean, he's definitely proved himself over a 10-year span by this point.
Maybe he just doesn't have the cachet of like LeBron James. You know, he's not like, I just don't.
No baseball player does besides Derek Jeter.
And that may be the reason.
Baseball's not
Ortiz
a game.
Ortiz is close. I think Ortiz is closer than Miguel Cabrera is. Isn't that weird to say, but.
Definitely. But, I mean, if you look at Cabrera, I was looking at this earlier. He's 4 hits away from 2000 already.
Defending two-time
MVP.
MVP. Did he win any other ones, or was it just those two?
Just those two.
Okay. That's pretty impressive, though, because...
He finished second in 2010.
Jeez.
That was the year that Josh Hamilton won.
Oh, man. See, that's another name right there. That very popular name, Mike Hamilton. I'm sure he's up there. I would guess he's up there in the jersey sales because of the switch to L.A. Because when you change teams, too, that usually gives you a little bump. But none of these players, all these players are mainstays. You know, like, and then Yadi. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about Yadi Molina. He's maybe one of the most, he's arguably the most popular Cardinal here now in St. Louis, especially after Pujols leaving a few years ago. You know, there's a few niche guys, and that's what the Cardinals always have, like the niche guys that you can enjoy watching. You know, the Carpenters. I guess, yeah, the multiple Carpenters, Matt and Chris now. And, you know, like Matt Adams, like Alan Craig, they're all like niche guys that are kind of fun. They're more like fantasy baseball sleepers than they are jersey sale kings. Yadier Molina's made his way because of the, I think it was second place in the MVP voting, you know, recently. I think it was to Buster Posey. I'm trying to remember if it was last year or 2 years ago. But, yeah, it's kind of cool to think that Yadi made it in the fourth and you don't see any other just crazy popular guys. And of course, Ryan Braun didn't make it, you know.
Right. I mean, Yadi is the heart of this team. It's very obvious. He just plays with so much passion and he's got involved in a lot of fights with the Reds and other teams. Yes. So I think that just added to his popularity. I actually have the top 10 list here. So after the Kershaw cutoff, it's Andrew McCutchen, Buster Posey,
interesting,
David Wright, Robinson Cano, and Manny Machado. So Miguel Cabrera is not in the top 10.
Baseball is just weird. I think it's because, and the reason why I brought up LeBron James earlier and just talking about like the mainstays in each of these sports, the idea that, oh, it's interesting. All right. The idea that LeBron James makes 20, maximum like 20 mil a year. I think Kobe had like 25 with his new contract. These guys like Cano can make anywhere up to like 300 mil. What's interesting is the idea of like the difference between the salary cap and the non-salary cap. But the weird part about it is that basketball has the real stars and the game is surrounded by stars. And it's a star-driven game. The best stars win. Baseball's not like that. Baseball's the opposite. Baseball's basically, you know, the team, even though it's an individual statistical element, it's the team sport in which everybody needs to contribute in order to be a World Series team, like the Giants did when they were just those terrible offensive teams, and they're the two victories that they had recently in the World Series. So it just, I guess it makes sense that baseball has these weird baseball sales just because they don't have the real stars. They kind of have their stars in each city. It just depends on which city wins. Maybe, and that's kind of like which one can get the extra fans in different areas that get the jerseys.
And I mean, basketball is a more star-driven sport just because of the nature of the
football
sport.
As well, yeah.
I mean, every time the Heat go up the floor, LeBron James is going to touch the ball probably at some point. Like we're talking about Shabazz Napier, 45%
yes.
of team's points or assists. But if you look at baseball, Miguel Cabrera comes up one every nine times. He maybe touches the ball a couple of times on the field, but he's only the highlight of a play maybe five times every game versus LeBron, where it's 45, something like that. So I think that's just why the NBA is way more star-driven than the Major League Baseball. But it's kind of interesting to see. You know, Miguel Cabrera, I think, is the huge
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I guess I come from the more statistical mind, so that's why Mike Trout comes to mind for me. But Cabrera is the guy who reminds people of Carl Yastrzemski, Babe Ruth, the amazing players in MLB history that were like the Triple Crown winners. And that's some of the reasons why it's surprising that no one.
You know,
even
one thing
up.
I was thinking of, maybe it's just because the Tigers have Scherzer, they have other
Verlander,
they have it's other big names.
See, that's why I thought the Cardinals would have the. I didn't know Yadi would be up there, but now he's kind of cemented himself, and that's why Pujols.
That's why Manny Machado is number 10 to me because, like,
no
if you're an Orioles fan,
you mean you don't want Chris Tillman's jersey.
It's got to be Manny Machado, I guess. I mean, he's an exciting young player.
I guess, there's an interesting reason for many of these, and that's why Posey, I guess, he seems to have found himself. And by the way, on the Yadier Molina, fourth in MVP voting 2 years ago, third in MVP voting last year, has been an all-star for five straight years, gold glove for six straight years. It's amazing what he's done, and that makes sense. He's finally made his way because he's been in the St. Louis system. It's amazing he's been in the league for 10 years now. This is 11th season, I'm pretty sure, this year. I think it's 10th if you're counting his quote-unquote 51-game rookie year. So it's amazing what he's done. I think you're right, though, as far as when you look at some of these teams. It's just a really interesting topic of conversation. And, you know, we exhausted a lot. We went through a lot of big topics today. I don't know if you wanted any more on the jersey sales stuff, because that was some really interesting things on the top 10 there.
It's something that can move us on to another discussion, kind of going back to last week. So Yusiel Puig is number 11.
Ooh, in interesting. Sales.
And I just saw that he was benched, I think, in last night's game because he came late to batting practice. I mean, I don't want to make mountain out of a molehill. It's probably not that big of a deal. L.A. traffic is notoriously bad. That could just be the explanation. But do we think Puig, this is going to be a continuing story all year, Puig being Puig. Maybe it's Manny being Manny.
I was going to say. You just got to get like a green monster out there so we can urinate in a cup, I guess, and enjoy the green monster a little bit more. Manny Ramirez had crazy times. We know in his time in Boston, it was just nuts. And then he left with a little bit of a sour taste in his mouth. Is Puig traded by the trade deadline?
No.
Okay.
There's no way.
Is he traded within the next 5 years?
I mean, it's all
Is he out of baseball in the next 5 years?
No, he's not out of baseball.
Because he's so talented. It's talent. A guy who gives you that much production gets a slap on the wrist. I think that's the reason. If he was a AAA minor leaguer, if he was the utility guy, like the guy who pops in my head is Enrique Wilson for those Yankee championship teams.
Right, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. He's a starting outfielder, and luckily they have four outfielders, Carl Crawford, Ethier, and Matt Kemp, who started in place of him today. I think it was today. Yeah, the home opener. That's great. Nice job for the fans there in LA. So do you think he plays? Oh, ready injuries, and you know his off the field behavior. Does he play 130 games this year?
I think he plays 130 games. There's no way they put so much marketing dollars and stuff into Puig. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be playing. I don't think they're going to let him play less than 130 games. He's young.
Well, and there's no injury in his, because he definitely has.
He has minor injuries, meaning Mattingly said, he just says he's hurt every time he strikes out. So it'll be interesting to see. But the discussion about Puig and whether they'll trade him or get rid of him at some point to move gears over to the NFL, I feel like we have to talk about DeSean Jackson before we run out of time.
Oh, that's a good call.
So obviously,
go ahead.
I mean, the Eagles decided that someone, it's a completely different situation, obviously, but someone who is trouble in the clubhouse, things of that nature, they decide it just isn't worth it. We're going to get rid of a Pro Bowler. And then he goes to the Washington Redskins, which is an interesting choice. They obviously have probably not as strong of a system there, in my opinion. I mean, Dan Snyder as an owner.
We've seen the offseason. I really enjoy Keith Olbermann's show on ESPN2, and they have done so much on making fun of his what they call OAF. It's the abbreviation for his new Native American Indian whatever thing that he's trying to save face with here. Take away the ownership, but think about the offense.
I mean, it could be exciting. It could be RG3 to DeSean Jackson. I mean, talk about speed. But I mean, they were terrible last year. I don't really know what other pieces they have around RG3 and I guess DeSean Jackson now. Do they have anyone big?
Is it still the same receiving core? I know they signed Colt McCoy, who backed up Kaepernick and Sam Fran last year. So that'll be interesting to see. You know, it's always nice to have that backup quarterback, so I was kind of impressed that they put that up. The Redskins, I think, have a similar receiving core this year. As far as what I'm looking at, you know, they obviously will benefit from the deep ball because they didn't do that. They were the worst team in the league as far as that goes, and DeSean Jackson can take any play, even a screen, and give you more yards after catch than you can even dare dream about. So I really like just having him in the receiving core, obviously. You know, they have Fred Davis. I know he's had a little bit of, I think he's been the guy who's been suspended for the drug substance problem. Pierre Garçon, obviously, he's had some great times there. Andre Roberts, they signed, I think, from Arizona this past offseason. Santana Moss is still there. And I think Logan Paulson's an okay backup for the tight end position. So they have depth at the wide receiver area. It's just, does it come down to Griffin once again? Are they a 10-win team or are they a 10-loss team? I think it comes down to him. That's the difference.
Right. I mean, he is a quarterback. Ultimately, it's a quarterback-driven league. That's what's going to happen. But I just would have liked to see Jackson go to a team that has better management. So, I mean, you're looking at Dan Snyder. You're looking at Jay Gruden as a first-year coach.
Yeah.
Is he really going to be able to tell DeSean what to do? He doesn't have that much experience. So, I mean, it's interesting to see. I just don't think Deshaun's going to perform well in this environment.
What's their record this year?
I'm going to go 6-10.
I was like, it's, I think they got a little unlucky last year. I know it's not like baseball where you get really unlucky and that can change you by 5-10 games. In football, that can change at least one or two games. I lean towards the pendulum going the other direction, and they're fighting for the playoffs, 8-8, 9-7. But I don't know if they make it. I just, Deshaun, maybe he makes a play. Keep in mind, he may win both those games against Philly just from just crazy plays. I know the NFC East has taken him and played a lot better than against him recently, so that's why it might be a little tougher that since he went inside the division. They know him in right. Philly. They know him in New York, and they know him in Dallas. It's not going to be easy for him, especially since he's actually making it even tougher within the division for himself. So it's going to be really exciting, though. Anything to leave us out on, Dan?
I think that's it. Just thank you for having me. It's always
maybe another week next week. I don't know. I got to check with Brad about next week.
You want to give me another 7-day contract? And
I'd be honored.
Great. Well, hopefully I'll be back next week. Thank you.
And enjoy your week, everybody.